There it is. Adelaide win three in a row.
Hit 107 and the Adelaide Crows present...
Hotty Adelaide!
The Podscast.
Jenkins, a boy! Marks turns, runs, and he kicks it.
Special week of the Podscast. Special week here in Adelaide. Showdown week. Great feel for it. Two teams absolutely on top of their game. Crows sitting top of the ladder. This is huge. Big run in for the finals. We've got no pods today, though. We do have Beck Goddard, who has renamed today's podcast the Goddard Cast or the Godcast.
The Godcast. It's got a nice ring to it, doesn't it?
We like the Godcast. We've got JJ as always. G'day, JJ.
How are we?
Before we get into talking about this game, let's talk about the draw. What were you thinking at halftime? What were you thinking at the end of the game?
Halftime, I was thinking I need to get my hands on the ball because I'd only had one disposal. And then at the end, yeah, it was my first draw to be that I was a part of, and it kind of felt more... we had a bit more joy than I think ordinarily you would have from a draw because we showed a lot of fight. I think it's easier. You see more often teams go down by 50 points unexpectedly than you do see teams come back like we did. So I took a lot of pride in the fact that we were able to come back from so far down when we'd played so horrifically.
What was the message at halftime? Let's get anything out of this. Do you say we can win or do you just think let's just try and play better?
We actually still thought we could win. Because our major strength is how quickly we can score. And we actually, in a strange way, this will sound a little strange, we got back too quickly. We got back to within 3 points or even so quickly that we were playing frenetically and there was still 17 minutes to go in the last quarter. And then they kick 3 goals in 2 minutes and then you think, oh, it's probably over again. And we come back again. And I found it remarkable. I got home Sunday night and I threw the last quarter on and 7 minutes to go. We'd kicked 12 goals already in the second half and then not one more goal was kicked until Mitch's goal after the siren. So in a strange way, we probably should have run away with that game as far back as we were. And credit to Collingwood, they played well and they did some good stuff late in the game, but it was a remarkable game and had a lot of friends who were there and they said it was probably the most enjoyable, at least half of footy they've seen live.
And the old enemy, pretty good comeback from them as well.
Yes,
I don't know if you saw the fans
escaped.
Leaving,
we
though.
Watched that, yes. I think we've all been guilty of that at different stages. But they escaped and some individual brilliance from two guys secured the 4 points for them and St Kilda would have to be sick on themselves for blowing that one.
What do you think of the games over the weekend, Beck?
I didn't get to watch. I got the last 2 minutes of the Crows game.
That's all you needed?
Yeah, I was coming. That's right. I was coming back from Darwin after visiting the Crows girls up there. But one thing that really I sort of started to think about is how annoying for the fans that they don't get a song either way on a draw.
Mm. It does feel interesting. Even in the media, they don't know what to throw to.
It's sort of like what they need to sort of play a neutrally annoying song. I was thinking, you know, what could it be? Something from Simply Red or something like that, you know, because I find that guy annoying. But I always love a song, even if it's not, you know, the team that I love. So how frustrating, but what a comeback. So well done, JJ.
Thank you.
Now, the media man down here, Shutt, said for us to move on from that one pretty quick, and so I will, because let's focus on the showdown. I want to ask you a couple of questions about the opposition, and everyone's fascinated by the rivalry. Spoke to Rory Atkins on my radio show, and Brad Ebert posed him some questions, and I'd like to get your answers on this, JJ, so we had the Rats' answers, and then I'll get yours. So let's get our first question posed by Brad Ebert to Rory Atkins.
Hey, Rory, just got a couple of questions for you. Who's the most feared Port player for you?
For myself, at the moment, I would say Robbie Gray. He's quite dangerous when he gets up around the ball. You never know what's going to happen. So, we tend to put a bit of time into him.
Who would be yours, JJ? Most feared Port player? You can take that either to talent or just getting knocked.
I'm going to say Jesse Palmer.
Who's Jesse Palmer?
He's from Swan Hill. I'm from Swan Hill. So he's in the Magpie side at the moment. So I'm going to say Jesse Palmer. In the 25, I threw you there. No.
I see what you're doing. Absolutely. I see what you're doing.
In the 25, or in the Port side, I'm assuming he's playing. I've heard he's playing. Is my old mate Pencil Monfries from Essendon?
Good story that.
Yeah, he'll get you. He'll get you when you're not ready for it.
Will he?
Yeah, he's a little. He's one of those little, you know, rib tickler type of guys. So I'm looking forward to crossing paths with little Angus in the weekend.
All right, let's get the next question.
Who was best on ground at your Mad Monday?
Oh, there'd have to be... It was probably myself and Daylight. And then Brad Crouch is usually pretty good.
All right, we just had a message from Shuts and he said, pull your head in again, mate.
Rat is a little bit of a, he has a bit of a go in the off season, as all young guys should. Best on, there's a lot of guys who would, as Rat did, like to take that mantle or claim that mantle. I think Rory Laird is probably one of our better performers when it comes to that time of the year.
The desk.
Not that we're thinking about that.
Is it because he's a smaller man and it takes him less? Or?
Yeah, he just gets in, gets the job done, and gets home.
Like his football, no nonsense. All right, let's get our next question from Brad
Evans. For us, it's obvious, Robbie Gray took it last week. But who would you trust for the Crows to kick a goal after the siren?
Same as last week, I'd go for Mitch McGovern, the proof in the pudding.
Okay. I want to hear you say me.
Not me. Yeah, after me. After me, yeah, that's okay. Right.
Mitch McGovern?
Can't believe he said. I can't believe he didn't say me. Inside 35, I'd say Tom Lynch. Outside 35, he hasn't got the capabilities. So he is a very straight kick for goal. Outside, or one of the longer shots for goal, probably have to go with Tex. I want to say myself. Yeah.
And well done on the 100 games for Tom Lynch as well.
Yes. It's been a long journey for 10 goal Tommy or T-shirt Tommy, whoever you want to.
What's been his troubles? Because I saw a list and I've forgotten what they all were because
he's had some really, I'd say innocuous, but quite serious injuries. So he's had the fractured neck or the fractured vertebra in his back up quite high. He did that up in Brisbane and he had a neck brace which went all the way down to his hips. He wore that for about 8 weeks. Dislocated shoulders, ACLs, foot surgery.
The virus.
The time in hospital. So he's had some serious issues, but I think everyone knows how important he is for our football side. So it's a credit to him to get to 100 games. And he's still 26, only about to turn 27 later this year. So he's probably got another 100 in him.
I was going to talk about this, and I toed and froed because it's a couple of weeks ago now, but just when you brought up illnesses, I can't go past your illness with the ham. Mm. What the hell was Harry Taylor all about there? Can you talk me through this for our listeners?
Yeah, look, I want to really put this one to bed because it's caused all sorts of havoc. Apparently, Harry, I've since found out, Harry wasn't overly thrilled with the amount of coverage that me being ill received before the game, which had really very little to do with me. I missed training and reporters wanted to know why I wasn't training. So that was the motivation for him to hand me the ham. It was actually sort of taking the mickey out of me more so than I thought he was actually trying to be funny at the time. I didn't know what to make of it, as you probably
wouldn't.
It's
a big miss. Where did it come from? Out of the sock? Out of the pants?
Well, I presume. I'm still only presuming this, that it came from his sock and he had it there the whole time.
Oh, let's think about this. The siren goes. How long until he signs your pulls out the ham and shakes it? Could have he got it from the bench or has he been?
Have got it from someone. He could have. He didn't have time to run up to one of the corporate boxes and grab it. So he must have had it from.
Becky, you work at the AFP. Give us your take on this.
He must have had someone on the bench with it. Like if I was a player and wanted to do something like that, I'd give it to Phil. You know, interchange steward quickly. Phil, give me that ham you've been holding in your pocket, and I'll just take it out.
Yeah. Well. I've been speechless for about 2 weeks on this topic. I didn't say anything. What do you say? What would you say?
I think I go, what's this like?
So next time it happens to me, I'll know what to say.
Or you just go, why the ham?
Well, of course I know why.
Did you just go, and chuck it down on the ground for the seagulls? Or what did you do?
Well, I threw it on the ground.
Or you just thank him due to the insulin spike post-game and go, it's recovery.
I was speechless. Yeah, I didn't know what to say. He didn't speak. I didn't speak. Andy Ott was next to me. He didn't say anything. It was just a really awkward time. It was.
I mean, as soon as I read about it, I thought it was a fake, like, Batuta Advocate or Onion article or something.
And I wasn't actually, because it was so strange and I knew, especially in this town, God love it, that it would grow wings and be a big story. I wasn't going to say anything. I wasn't going to make it public whatsoever. And I hope Harry hears this because he wasn't happy that it got out. But Tex, God love him, on Monday morning decided to get on radio and tell everyone the story. So I basically had to tell everyone what
happened. If it had happened to Tex, he would have already worked his way into having a Bataki sponsorship, wouldn't he? All right, let's get into fitness tests. This is what I've written down here. Obviously, we're not sure on the team we're going to completely take. We've had a few doubts. Eddie?
Yes, Eddie's probably the one that's most in doubt, to my untrained eye.
Becky, you're a coach. If you're putting a player through a fitness test, what does it involve?
Oh, it depends on what the injury is, I suppose. You know, is it calf? Is it hamstring? You know, can you feel it? But Eddie's is a bit different, isn't it? Because he had surgery, and I'm scared. Like, I don't want anything to split open. As a fan, I'm scared.
Yeah,
as a coach, how do you test that? That's not going to pop open.
Do you trust a player? Like, is it different? A fitness test different depending who the player is? The more a senior, that you just go, look, mate, it's your responsibility to tell us how you're feeling. Whereas a younger player,
there's a different level of responsibility on the player. I know when I had my sore ribs, I came back and Pods actually put me through the ringer.
Like tackled me, hitting the shoulders?
Yeah, just proving you can do the contested work. So it depends what it is, Beck's right. Depends what the injury is. I believe his is, it's just a matter of when the stitches and that sort of dissolve and how he feels. And, you know, he's going to, you can't really, well, you can, but not, you don't get whacked in the stomach as much, but you're tackling and things like that. He'll certainly need to be confident enough to deal with some contact. But Eddie's a pretty adaptable guy. So I would think, I'm trying to give the listeners something. I would think he will play.
And what do you actually do?
On a fitness test?
Yeah.
Depends what it is. Pikey is a very thorough man, so he likes to really put you through, make you jump over a lot of hurdles. You know, if you've had a sore shoulder, if you've been carrying a knock or had a broken bone or whatever, and you're coming back, it's often contested work. You need to prove you can tackle, prove you can be tackled.
Do you reckon, though, you could get through a fitness test, and in the back of your head, you know, I'm not feeling great here, but I can beat this test? And let's just keep the fingers crossed for the game. That must happen a little bit.
I think you can, but you need to be... I remember when I was at the Bendigo Bombers, I injured my AC and I got through a test and I definitely proved to them I was right, when in fact I wasn't right to play. I was just young and I just wanted to play footy. Mm. But as you get older, you learn and understand that it's detrimental to the team if you put yourself out there when you know that you're not right.
Okay, let's go to retirements. This has been the biggest thing for the week. I'd say it's either that or Patrick Dangerfield missing out on the Brownlow medal.
That's been pretty big too.
I'll go with that then first. Patrick Dangerfield missing out on the Brownlow. Saw a lot of commentary saying that 1 week, and of course this would happen for Danger just because he's so loved, let's change the rules all of a sudden, that 1 week means you're not an unfair player. For things like a little rough tackle or whatever it is that could cost you a Brownlow medal, some people said let's go to 3 weeks for proper dirty hits or... really, really strong.
Mark Ricciuto was a guy that was echoing those thoughts. I don't think he came up with it, but someone said it, and he was the one. I saw him on Twitter saying that maybe it perhaps should be 3 or 4 games that you miss. I don't mind the one. I don't see a need to change it, but if you were going to, I don't mind.
Because he's not an unfair player, is he?
No, he's not at all. Pat's the biggest best ball player I've ever seen. He doesn't ever get involved in wrestling and that kind of stuff, off the ball stuff. But perhaps take the vote, if he was to receive votes last week, perhaps take those votes off him. But it is what, you know, people have missed, you know, well, how does Chris Grant and Corey McKernan feel if we
they
make different rules for ongoing and those guys missed out on Brownlows, don't it? Beck, what do you think?
Obviously I used to be an umpire, so I always, with the best and fairest, when we talk about the fairest, it's also about sort of on-field behaviour, the way that they speak to other players, what you hear on-field, not necessarily the way that they lay a tackle or something like that. So I think you'll find that those guys who genuinely weren't the best and fairest, but because of the way that they sort of handled themselves on the field, but when you go to Patrick, it's different because it's not that fairest, that issue of it's a bad tackle or something like that. I would hate to see someone like Chelsea Randall. She's a bit prolific with her sling tackling and she's reminded often by the AFL, miss out on votes because she's untidy, because that's not in her intention and it's not her desire to behave like that. So
so I can just get that off you again. As an umpire, people always say, oh, he's a vote polar. You know, even when it's not his best game. Let's talk about like a Simon Black, someone like that. Even if he wasn't outstanding, he seemed to get votes. Is that because he maybe has a nice manner?
Well, this is the true meaning of what the award is. The best and fairest. It's the true symbol of what the game is. So, they've played a great game, but also that they've shown the spirit of the game in that as well. And that was how I always used to approach voting for when I was umpiring in the NEAFL, how I would look at my votes is the way they carried themselves on the field. Now, that's not sucking up to the umpire. It's just that genuine intention for the ball, the contested ball, and the way they carried themselves.
If a player shook your hand at the end of the game, what kind of a difference would that make?
None. Didn't make any difference.
I was always big to do that. You just got to introduce yourself to the umpire.
But it's the rules of the game. The rules, the Brownlow, that's never changed. It hasn't changed. Should it change? Should it evolve? I don't know. I think the game is great in that it always is looking to address the rules and make the game better for the fans.
And that's what the MVP is there for anyway,
right.
Isn't it? And he'll probably win that. Retirement's huge, huge week. We've had our own in Tomo, Nick Riewoldt, Mitchell and Hodge. They are giants of the game, to be honest. And how many of those do you think would go on? And if you had to, which would you offer a one-year deal
great
to?
Great question. One-year deal, I would offer... It'd be between... Luke Hodge would be great. Mm. We've got a young back line. He'd be great running the show. But it would be between Pritis and Mitchell. Sam Mitchell, I think.
You'd go Sam Mitchell?
Yeah. On-field coach. Still 27 disposals a game he's averaging this year. Knew that off the top of my head, Amos. And he's great. You know, his delivery of the ball, something that we could add to our side, I think he would be great. But after him moving from Melbourne to Perth, I dare say we'd have trouble getting him to move back from Perth to Adelaide. So, but five remarkable players, including one of our own.
I love Nick Riewoldt, and I felt like he could probably go on again. But
yeah,
at some point, you have to call the career. How old are you, JJ?
I'm 28. 28. I like to consider myself. I did the math. I'm only 25 in AFL terms.
Because you came in late, isn't
Yeah, so that's the way I sort
I'm
of
sure
look
the,
at it.
I'm Justin sure your Reed, cells feel listening. The same way, the genetics. What I was going to say to you, mate, is you hit 28, you've signed a long-term deal, so this is probably your final deal.
Yes, probably.
More than likely. Do you start putting a plan in place of what you're going to do next?
Certainly. The Emma Barr does a magnificent job of ensuring that. She's our welfare manager and sort of the lady in charge of ensuring the guys are doing something away from footy, because I think the average AFL career is only 3 to 4 years. So for 18-year-olds to get drafted, that's, you know, you're out of the game at 21, 22 more often than not. And that's the time when a lot of kids are doing apprenticeships. So, that, you know, that by that time, an AFL player is coming out of the game and his friends are qualified builders, qualified mechanics, finish uni. And these guys are coming out with basically 4 years of footy. And you do get taught a lot of life skills in footy, but, you know, that doesn't necessarily translate to a job. But Emma, alongside the rest of the welfare managers, do a great job of getting us ready for life after footy.
People think 31, 32 retirement.
Yeah.
But someone like Nick Riewoldt is probably fitter than the majority of players in the AFL.
Yeah.
And we all see how meticulous he works and you hear about his running. Does a player like you now that there's the internet around and stuff like that, are you ever doing any of your own researching? Like, who says I have to retire at 32? There's some genome therapy over here in America that reckons they can get you to 36. Or, I mean, you've got Tom Brady, guys like that, who can play well into the yesteryear with
40, he is.
He's 40.
Happy birthday to the great man, too.
Why do we have to retire at 32 if your body is good? There just seems to be, as soon as you hit that age, everyone goes, you got to go.
Yeah.
Why?
It's a bit of a culture thing. It's the way that the game... AFL football really moves in waves and everyone copies everyone else. And a few years ago, not so much now, I think it has changed that over 30s is a little bit more back in vogue, but it was always, as soon as you hit 30, you're basically on the absolute edge of your footballing life. But, you know, we brought Pods over at 29 or 30 years old and gave him a couple of years, and he was great for our young forwards. And I think we're seeing now the value of the guys that are older, still take care of them. Like Sam Mitchell, Luke Hodge, they're as durable as anyone. They still play every week if you want them.
I can't help but think that there'd be, like you said, the culture of retire at 32 might get into players' heads and they might think, oh, maybe I am done. And you go, well, hold on, how's your body?
Yeah.
That's what it is, isn't it?
It's the mental aspect of it as well. A lot of the players, you listen to the retirement speeches and a lot of the guys will say, physically, I still think I can compete, but... mentally and emotionally, I've had enough. And Sam Mitchell said he has more passion for getting his computer out on a Monday and coding games and doing the coaching aspect than he does now for doing ice baths and things like that. And that's just how guys, they get sick of and have had enough after 15, 16. I know Tomo's played 17 years of AFL footy. It just becomes enough.
Let's go straight into your top four because it's very much linked to what we're talking about. So let's hit the sting for JJ's top four.
JJ's top four.
All right, JJ.
Now you've caught me slightly on the hop here. I've only had 3 to 4 days to prepare for the top four, but I wanted to rank the five retiring players, which is always controversial. And I know we have an enormous listenership, so we could be in trouble. And I know one of my... the fifth player who will not make the list... is the most likely to hear the podcast. So dangerous times, but I've left Scott Thompson off the list.
Oh, it's a huge top four though.
Well, that's just, let's take the glass half full, back and just say, look, he's had a remarkable career, over 300 games. He'll go into the Hall of Fame in 5 years and just say, look, that means the top four must be remarkable.
Yeah, it's not a top four biceps either. He'd win that.
No, he'd win that. He'd be 1, 2, 3, and 4 in that. Fourth position, Matthew Prittis, Brownlow medalist, 234 games. Actually has a Brownlow medal and a Sandover medal, which is the Waffle League best and fairest, which is a remarkable achievement.
Late draft pick too, later in life.
Yeah, I believe he was a rookie selection, so it just kept getting better and better. And I've got a cool little story about Matt Prittis. When he won the Brownlow, most times the AFL organise for the Brownlow medalists, they do the lap of honour and they get driven in underneath the stadium and, you know, looked after and wined and dined. And I was walking into the grand final the year he won the Brownlow, and he's just walking alongside me. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, you know, just cruising on in. He's just the most relaxed guy. I said, surely, you know, surely you can get driven in or get looked after. He's like, nah, you know, I'll just go in, do this thing, and then I'll get out of here. And that's it. And that's just how he went about his footy. Twice, very relevant for us, twice he won the Ross Glendening medal for best player in the Western Derby. Funnily enough, didn't win the BNF the year he won the Brownlow, which was a surprise.
He was right up there with like a Woe Woden for people giving him grief about winning the Brownlow.
Yeah,
but
he just
kept going.
He was so and is so darn consistent. Perhaps if Nick Natanui, this is not a silly thing to say, if Nick Natanui was playing, perhaps he wouldn't be retiring because he only just signed a contract extension about 2 months ago. So it's funny how quickly AFL footy can change because he 2 months ago he thinks he's playing again and then all of a sudden he's not, but has had a marvellous career. I've gone for Nick Riewoldt at three, and I'm angry at myself because I don't like ranking players according to premierships because it takes a team to win a premiership. I hate the argument of Jordan versus LeBron and that who's won more titles because it's a team sport, but I've been sucked into it. And I've left the two guys with four premierships at 2-1. But Nick Riewoldt, 333 games with a few more to go. I saw a quote from him this morning on ESPN Australia saying that he's got 4 games to go, and for each game he will have his resting bitch face on. And that tells you a little bit about his competitiveness and the way he goes about footy.
Although I saw the 4 games thing, I thought, mate, you can make the finals.
Well, they could do.
Did you see his dad's tweet?
No, I didn't know his dad
tweeted. So he called the conversation at 2 o'clock, the press conference at 2 o'clock, and his dad had tweeted it at 12:30, just replied to someone, a family friend, and said, yes, confirmed, all done, 4 games left. And the tweet came down 5 minutes later because dad had blown it.
That's why if you're 50 plus, you probably shouldn't be tweeting. That's rude, but it's fair. Over 700 goals, much maligned for his goalkeeping, but he's kicked over 700 goals.
Do you get shown vision as a forward? You love to run up the ground. He'd probably be the number one of all time.
Yeah, he was the one known for Becky. He was that guy that was known for that work rate. Yep. And he had to work through, it was a time where sort of zone defense came in and the defenders would just hand him over and it was a bit easier. It was 1 against 3, but he just continued to work, went up to the wing, a la Matthew Richardson in the past few years, and just remarkable player.
Seems like a really nice guy, is he?
Yeah, well, he definitely comes across like that. Mm. But he's one that was in that generation of the true full forward that then had to change his game to fit the modern game. Yeah. So that is what's remarkable about his goals.
It is. St Kilda record holder, 220 games as captain, 6-time best and fairest, 4-time leading goal kicker, 5-time All-Australian, and has probably taken the equal greatest, most courageous mark of all time with that mark at the SCG. Number two is Sammy Mitchell, 307 games with a few left as well, 4 premierships, and I believe the first of the 4 he was the captain, Beck?
He was.
Brownlow medalist, given that in retrospect after Joe lost that Three-time All-Australian, two-time Lou Richards Player of the Year. Nice little stat for you there, Amos. And he's been a remarkable. He has didn't quite get to, as I said, I caught on the hop, didn't quite get to the to check these stats, but I believe he's the record holder for contested possessions, clearances, and he's about to pass Scott West for the most handballs ever. He's about 15 away, so he should do that this week. So he's had a remarkable career, just continued to amass football. And Luke Hodge is my number one retiree of the past week. Hard to go past the great man. Four premierships, over 300 games, 200 goals, was the number one pick in that super draft with Chris Judd and Luke Ball, and among others. Two-time Norm Smith medalist. Hard to argue with someone who can perform like our great Andrew McLeod did on the biggest day when the team needs you.
What's he like?
He's done that twice.
What's he like super to play guy. Against?
Oh, to play against? He's very relaxed. Unbelievably relaxed. I think in his younger days, he was fiery and he used to get suspended a little bit, and he was a really... He plays on the edge, but in his past 5 years, he's very relaxed. I remember playing against him this year, and he's always smiling and talking, and he's quite relaxed. I think he's just so sure of himself. He just knows how the game goes and what he needs to do to play well. And, remarkable player.
With all due respect, you've missed one, and that's James Kelly, who's also retired this year.
Is he retired?
He has to be, wouldn't he?
Well, he's not.
You're making up stuff now.
I'm retiring him now. So he's retired. He's come back for two seasons.
I'm of the opinion, and I have good information out of Essendon, that he will play on.
Job? When are you going to retire?
Am I done?
I'd like you to say that you've got more than one contract left.
I have. I reckon I've got two.
When do you see it? When do you see it finishing? If you would picture perfect, your career. I've got that written down. Shuts wants me to ask you this,
all
mate. How many
questions?
I've got 4 years to go after this year, so let's probably work through at least 25% of the contract, and then we'll work out.
Not like 35. You haven't got like the perfect career built.
No, not at all. And sometimes I sit on the couch and think, geez, I wish I started when I was 18. But you know, perhaps at the back half or the last few years, perhaps there won't be there wouldn't have been 32, 33, 34 if I started early, because I haven't. I actually believe in the fact I haven't got the. I've got more tread left on the tyres. So. Let's get through these 5 years, win a couple of flags, and we'll see what happens.
That's what I want to hear. Beck Goddard, you are going to step in for Pods to finish this thing off and give us the coach's cliche.
Not much to beat
it won't
Beck,
be hard.
So you don't have to.
Coach's cliche for the week, and I thought it was relevant given that we've got the showdown. We're ready?
Ready.
We have the utmost respect for them, which means we hate them with the passion of a thousand suns, and we can't wait to beat them this weekend.
We'll leave it right on that one. Thanks very much,
Thank
JJ.
You. It's a pleasure to be back.
Good on the Codscast. And the ham still just astounds me. Next week, you can think about
done.
It further.
We're done with the ham.
We're done
right?
with the ham. The ham issue is over. Thanks very much to Toyota. If you want to find out any more about the Crows, go to afc.com.au and let's beat that power.